Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Kathleen O, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Wednesday, November 3rd, and this is a 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book. We're on page 96, the second paragraph. Suppose now you are making your second visit, and we'll be reading and commenting on this one paragraph only. Today's readers are Kathy B., who will be reading the 12 steps, Patty L. will be reading the 12 traditions, and the readers of our text are Laura W., Stephen G., and Kara L. The share ID for Tuesday, November 2nd, the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, is 18,817, 18817. And this morning's Wednesday, November 3rd, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, share ID is 18,025. 18025. Our newcomer greeter for today is Kaylee R., and Leslie M. will be making the announcement. The OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I'll now ask Patty L. to read the 12 steps. Good morning, Patty. Or sorry, Kathy. Kathy.
Hi, good morning. Sorry, I was supposed to read the traditions, but I'd be happy to read the steps if you want.
No. I said the name wrong. It's Kathy B. Sorry, Patty.
Okay, no worries.
Good morning. This is Kathy B., and I live in Oklahoma, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all of these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Thank you for allowing me to serve today.
Thank you, Kathy B. Okay, Patty L., if you'd read the 12 traditions for us, please.
Hi, good morning, everyone. My name is Patty L. I'm from Massachusetts, and I'm a compulsive overeater. Okay, I'm sorry. Here are the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. The only requirement, three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, the OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. In 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all of these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for letting me do service today.
Thank you, Patty L. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. And today we resume our study of the Big Book. We're on page 96, the second paragraph, that begins with suppose now you are making your second visit. We're reading and commenting on this one paragraph only. And Laura W., if you could get us started, please. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning, Kathleen. I hope I can be heard okay. Good morning. This is Laura W. This is Laura W. I'm a recovered compulsive eater, anorexic, and exercise bulimic in southern New Jersey. Suppose now you are making your second visit to a man. He has read this volume and says he is prepared to go through with the 12 steps of the program of recovery. Having had the experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. Let him know you are available if he wishes to make a decision and tell his story, but do not insist upon it if he prefers to consult someone else. Yeah, this is a great paragraph. You know, this reminds me, first of all, this chapter is so helpful to me, not just as a sponsor, but as a friend, as a mother, as a wife. You know, this paragraph tells me to be helpful is my only aim. You know, I'm not here to direct somebody. I'm not here to demand. It reminds me, you know, that I'm here to let them tell their story to me. And obviously it says you're making your second visit to a man. So obviously there's some sort of willingness on the other person's part. You know, they've read the volume. So they've read the book. They're willing to read the book. They're prepared to go through with it. And I can only share what I've lived. I can't share what I think might be the right thing or what I heard other people, what works for other people. I can only share my experience. And I can give practical advice to sponsees. And to people who might ask me, you know, hey, why do you eat that way? Or you tell me more about it. And I really don't go into detail when somebody says, why do you eat that way? Or, you know, for me, I do weigh and measure. So, you know, for 17 years, I've taken a little scale to restaurants. I've taken little scales to weddings. And when people say, why do you do that? And I give them a quick response. And if they keep asking more questions, then I'll share a little bit more. You know, let the person know that I'm available. I'm here. Basically, I'm here if you need me. You know, I'm here if you want to talk. I'm here if you want to ask questions. But they have a decision. They have a choice in this matter. It's not, you know, my way or the highway. And I can't insist upon anything. And this is a great reminder to me. I'm living this right now with my almost 15-year-old daughter. She has lost a significant amount of weight. She's eating like an anorexic, but I can't say, you know, I'm not here to diagnose her. All I can share is my experience when she asks, which she does, and I'm grateful for that communication. But, you know, but I can't take her and shake her like I want to. You know, all I can do is, as I hear over and over, I can recover, I can recover, I can recover. And that's what I'm going to do. You know, that's what I did yesterday. That's what I'm going to today. And that's, God willing, what I'll do tomorrow. I can share my experience, strength, and hope. And again, my only aim in this program is to be helpful. And I can't be helpful if I haven't lived it. Thank you for letting me share, and I look forward to hearing everybody else. I pass.
Thank you, Laura W. Okay, we are on page 96, the second paragraph. Suppose now you are making your second visit. And although we do value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So if you haven't shared on Monday or Tuesday and you'd like to share on this paragraph, I'm ready for your name.
Carrie G.
Carrie G.
Debbie P.
Debbie P.
Jody E.
Jody E.
Veronica B.
Veronica B. Okay.
Stephen G.
Stephen G. Thanks for stepping up, people. Okay. Carrie G, Debbie P, Jody E, Veronica B, and Stephen G. We'll start there. Go ahead, Carrie.
Good morning. Thank you for your service. This is Carrie G in Colorado. Grateful you recovered today. And I just was working with my sponsor this morning, finishing up step 11, and we'll be studying step 12. And she says, make sure to put your name out on the line. You need to start sponsoring. And it's such a gift. I'm so grateful to be here again. And remember that I can't spend, you know, yesterday's paragraph, I can't spend too much time on any one situation. So in this paragraph, it's telling us that the person needs to be decided, not just prepared. So the person can't just have this intention. And I like that was kind of discussed already, like that the person really needs to be desperate. And I have a good fellow who in OA who's a friend of mine. And so that kind of situation I really need to pray about, because I don't want to be, you know, feeling like I have to save her. I think it's a little different when the person is really close to us. And so I get to take that to God, to my higher power, and just discern, you know, am I able to carry a message of depth and weight when there's like a personal twist to it? But working with others, it's an entire chapter. Kind of like step one, there's four chapters for it. We spend a lot of time on step one. And so now the book is giving us a lot of direction. And I just am very grateful to be taught not to spend too much time on somebody, but to let their experiences kind of dictate whether they are doing the work or not. And let the person kind of guide the step work. I've been taught, you know, give the assignment and then they show up. They'll text and say, I'm done reading. I'm done doing the bullet points, as opposed to setting deadlines for them. You know, the person has to want it. The person, and that's me. I wanted it. I went through the steps in about 6 weeks just now, and it's been an amazing awakening. It's been absolutely brilliant. So if you've never gone through steps, my suggestion and experience would be go as fast as you can. Do the work. Get up early. Read, write, turn in your assignments, and show up, because it's miraculous. The promises come true, and there's so much neutrality and freedom. So with that, I pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Carrie G. in Colorado. And Debbie P., you're up, followed by Jody E. Go ahead, Debbie.
Good morning. This is Debbie P., gratefully recovered in Indiana. What I got from this paragraph today, working with others, I don't push anything on anybody, and likewise, I don't want anything pushed on me as far as, you know, just constantly being told, this is what you need to do. So this is a good direction for me to just back up and let this other person's program be their program or their decision. It's not my decision to make for them. It is, however, my decision to make for me. So the amount of effort that I'm willing to put into the amount of work needed for these steps is the amount of relief I get. So if I do more outreach, if I do more reading, if I do more praying and meditating, I get more answers than if I don't do as much in a day's time. And it is daily for me. I have to practice this daily. I've tried many, many times to rest on my laurels and let one day's hard work last for 2 or 3 weeks, and it doesn't. It really doesn't work that way. I have to do everything daily. I have to check in with my sponsor. I have to check in with my higher power. And I can only share my experience, strength, and hope. And then the last thing that I got from this is, who am I to rob someone else of the dignity to learn how to be responsible for their own recovery? And if I'm pushy, if I'm insistent, if I'm giving advice and all those things, I'm not giving them the freedom to do what they need to do and to learn their lessons. And same for me. I mean, I need that freedom as well to be able to learn the lessons I need to learn. So I will pass with that. Thank you so much, and thank you all for your service today.
And thank you, Debbie P. in Indiana. Okay, Jody E., good morning. You're up, followed by Veronica B.
Good morning, Kathleen O. and everybody. This is Jody E., gratefully recovered in California. So this is assuming that I am visiting my prospect. So I am looking for a prospect, and I'm feeling him out. I've given him the book, and he has read it. So he has some willingness. And he says he's prepared to go through with the program. So if that's the case, I can let him know I'm available, which is what we do. We know, we let each other know when we are available. And then it's up to them if they want to start working these 12 steps, which does include making a decision, which reminds me of step 3. We make a decision. But we have to make a decision too in step 1 to put down the food. And that often is the hardest thing for us to do as compulsive overeaters. The food is our comfort, our ease and comfort, and our friend, we think. And becoming willing to put down the food, whether it's the first time we do it or the 10th time, can be very difficult. So the food is the best convincer for us, and I cannot convince anybody to put down the food or to make a decision to turn his will and his life over to the care of God. But I don't have to do that. Our higher power, God, does that through the food. We are compulsive overeaters, and that is God's way of getting to us, compulsive overeaters, through those alcoholic foods that will bring us down. And we will or we won't become willing to work these 12 steps and to get abstinent. And only God and us can make that happen. I, as a sponsor, I cannot make that happen for anybody else. But if they're ready and if they're willing, I need to be ready and willing to help, because that is how I save myself and maintain my recovery. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Jody E. in California. And good morning, Veronica. You're up, followed by Stephen G.
Good morning. I'm Veronica, compulsive overeater and a bulimic in LA. And thank you, Kathleen, for your service. I love this paragraph. I love the reminder that I do not have to push anybody. I don't have to convince anybody that they have a problem. The disease itself, the food, will drive them into asking for help. My experience is I have recovered because I was desperate when I came into Overeaters Anonymous. I was desperate. I was hopeless. I wanted another way of living. I was beaten in a state of hopelessness. And in that state, I was willing to take the actions necessary to get this relationship with God that I have today. I had to be as hopeless as Bill was, because in that state, that's when I'm eager and I can accept what the solution is, and that's a higher power. And that the steps is the only thing that's going to bring me any kind of relief, any kind of relief with my obsession over compulsive eating and with my compulsive eating, you know, with my obsessive thoughts. And every paragraph we've been reading is about, I can't push anybody. The person coming into OA is the one that has to surrender and the one that has to say, I need help. And when I came into OA, it was hard for me to say, I need help. I wasn't used to asking for help, but I learned to ask for help. And here, this paragraph just tells me that it reminds me that I have to let them come to me, and that when they're ready, I am happy to help. Happy to help with my experience, strength, and hope. Because for me, this is the only thing that has helped me maintain any kind of sanity when it comes to the food area and when it comes to my unmanageability as far as my life is concerned. I am so overpaid. I'm so grateful for this program. My life today is nothing like it was 11 years ago when I came into Overeaters Anonymous. I'm absolutely overpaid with gratitude, and everyone have a nice day. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Veronica B. in California. And Stephen, before I take you, I just want to remind everyone we're on page 96, the second paragraph. Suppose you are making your second visit, and I'll be ready to take more shares after Stephen. So go ahead, please, Stephen. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I'm Stephen. I'm Stephen G. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Canada. The theme of this chapter that I see is humility in the person that's making the approach and hopelessness in the person that's being approached. So the first line, suppose you are now making your second visit to the man, and he has read this volume and says he's prepared to go through the 12 steps. So it sounds like he's passed from step one to step two. And the only thing that can make a person pass from step one to step two is the pain of the disease. You know, the book refers repeatedly in different ways to that concept. You know, alcohol being the great persuader that eventually beats us into a state of reasonableness. In the doctor's opinion, it says frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices. And that, of course, was my experience. I had to have three relapses of greater intensity and greater discomfort and get to the point of being suicidal to really be willing to do the things that were necessary to get recovered. And then once that hopelessness occurs and I'm approached with humility, then the sponsor should have a very light touch, because the engine or the motor for my recovery is going to be my own fear of going back into that pain again. And the path to recovery is the 12 steps that are very clearly laid out in the instructions in this big book. And it says here again, having had the experience yourself, so the only thing I'm going to share is my experience. And if the person has some other ideas of how they can recover or wants to work with another person, again, humility. let people do what they think is going to work for them. People will only work with me if they want to work with me. They'll only do the 12 steps when they feel there's no other option. And that's certainly what I experienced. So again, humility in the person that's making the approach and hopelessness in the person that's being approached. And once those two ingredients are present, then my experience in the book says that then good things can happen. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen G. in Canada. Okay, if you haven't shared Monday or Tuesday and you'd like to share on this paragraph, the second paragraph, page 96, please give me your name.
Sharby.
Is that Char?
Yes.
Okay, Sharby.
Cynthia C.
Cynthia C.
Ann B.
Ann B.
Allison B.
Allison B. Okay. I have Char B, Cynthia C, Ann B, and Allison B. Go ahead, please, Char B. Good morning. Star one to unmute, Char.
Whoops, sorry about that. Thank you so much for your service. I'm Char B. I live in Michigan. I am a compulsive overeater, and I'd like to talk about what this paragraph means to me as a newcomer here. I'm not in a position to sponsor in this program. I have not completed the steps, but I did have an experience with a sponsor yesterday where she said to me, you know what, I think that you may need a little bit more time to come to the hopelessness of your experience here, and I cannot do that for you. I can support you, but I can't do that for you. And I had had, I don't know enough about my red light and my yellow light foods, but what I got, she said you need to pick up the phone instead of pick up the food, basically. That was the practice she wanted me to engage in. And we were normally getting together to read the big book, and because I hadn't been abstinent, that couldn't happen. And I felt very sad, but it did encourage me to pick up the phone before I started lunch, pick up the phone. It just encouraged me a little bit. And it also, you know, thank you to her, because she was very clear about her position and caused me to have some clarity. And then, that's kind of the way it works, is we're clear with each other and we recover together. And so I just wanted to offer the perspective of the newcomer here, that it's very hard, as we all know, to come to this. At least for me, really hard for me to be at this passage right now, and so scared, and also kind of clueless, and very grateful to be with you guys. Thank you.
Thank you, Char B in Michigan. And Cynthia C, you're up, followed by Ann B. Go ahead, Cynthia.
Hey,
thank you.
I thought it
were
was
you calling Cynthia C?
Cynthia C?
Okay.
Oh, I thought I was next. Okay, sorry.
Okay, this is Cynthia C. Should I go ahead?
Yes. Thanks, Cynthia.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Thank you. This is Cynthia C., recovered compulsive overeater and food addict in Newton, Massachusetts. Thank you so much, moderator, and everybody who makes this meeting happen today and every day. I'm incredibly, deeply, deeply, deeply grateful for it. This is a really this whole passage, these pages that we've been reading lately, this makes me think a lot about, you know, when I first came into program, when I came back into program after a 20-year relapse, and how I sponsor and my interactions with people have asked me to sponsor them. And like everybody else, I'm not perfect. I don't have anything down perfectly. You know, I'm perfectly imperfect. You know, and I'm just another, you know, another spiritual sick human out there in recovery who is striving to have closer conscious contact with my higher power, you know, by putting down the food, by working the 12 steps, by sponsoring, by, you know, the focus for me, my answer is the 12 steps, and I'm using the tools, but the 12 steps. And so when I came in, I was so deeply, like I've heard other people say, I was deeply desperate, and I just ran to work the steps as quickly as I could. Like, I really wanted it, and like my sponsor wanted to read the big book with me, and I really wanted to get through it faster than she had the time for. And so, you know, she talked to her sponsor, and I read, finished. I mean, I had been in, I had had many, many years in program before and many years in AA. And so I was able to like finish reading the big book on my own, to get through the steps at the speed that I needed to. And I needed to get through it quickly because I really thought I would have picked up. Like, I was desperate and I wanted it, you know? And so when I sponsor, it's interesting because, you know, I've had a number of people ask me to sponsor them, and then I feel like my codependency, you know, one of my biggest character defects is that codependency and people pleasing and approval seeking, and then, you know, I want to, I don't know, make it easier for them or want to meet them where they are, or, you know, and there are all these wonderful women who want, you know, who want to recover and yet aren't willing, you know, and but people aren't always willing to do the work, and I get that, you know, and I don't always know what to do. You know, I know it's not my job to convince other people why this works. And my only job is to share what worked for me. And I may not be the right sponsor for everybody. I mean, I started off with a very close, you know, with someone who'd become a very close friend, and logistically it didn't work for her to sponsor me, and she's still a close friend in program. You know, when I found my other sponsor, like that's, and she's a big part of my recovery. You know, I don't know. You know, I always struggle with this, my set of boundaries and what I can give to someone and what I can't give to someone, and maybe what makes it too easy for someone. I don't know. I want to be thoughtful. It's really hard and kind of scary when we come into program. There's this whole, we've not done 12 steps before. There's this whole new world, and it brings about truly amazing, amazing, amazing promises. But at the beginning, it's sometimes hard to see that. You know, so I don't know. I just want to say, like, I'm sure I'm not the only one out there who still wobbles back and forth on what boundaries to set with sponsors or how to know when someone's really willing or not willing. And I guess truly, I guess it's not my job to know that either. You know, they'll do what I'm, you know, they'll do what I did or find their own way, or, you know, I don't want to lose my sense of being loving and kind and compassionate, as well as being able to set up, you know, be able to have healthy boundaries. You know, I guess that is part of what I'm learning in program. As I put down the food, you know, and work the 12 steps, it's learning to have healthier boundaries and limits, which is not something I ever grew up with. So the other thing I want to say is today is the 8th anniversary of my father's passing, and I'm just feeling a lot of feelings and mixed emotions, and it's kind of painful. You know, my dad, you know, he was a lovable, charming man, and yet he did a lot of things that were really awful, and I've worked the steps on him, and I don't feel resentful, but I still have old feelings that come up, and I'm grateful today that, you know, I can still be in step 12, I can still be of service, I can do my 11th step, that, you know, I don't have to binge over my feelings, that I can feel my feelings today and still show up and be present for life. So with that, I pass. Thank you so much, everybody, for being here.
Thank you, Cynthia C. in Massachusetts. And Ann B., were you the one that came in with Cynthia, or did I miss a name in there somewhere?
Yes, I thought I was second. Okay.
Ann, go ahead. Thank you.
In New York, and
I am a compulsive overeater. I don't like the word recovered, but I have been abstinent for 17 years, and I've sponsored a lot of people. You know, when I first came in, I had that gift of willingness. I had done enough experimenting to believe that I was an addict. I had done enough spiritual work in my life to believe that spiritual recovery could, particularly my experience with natural childbirth, that spiritual practices could help me control an involuntary process. And I came here having hit bottom and feeling like my house was on fire and being willing to work this program like it was an emergency. And when I started sponsoring, I expected other people to be in the same place as I was. You know, they say expectations are premeditated resentments. And they weren't. You know, a lot of the people in program that came, you know, and wanted to be sponsored were really tourists. They would get a certain amount of recovery and they would leave, or they wouldn't even do anything. So, you know, I did learn to sort of let go. And one of the tests that I have of whether someone is willing is, did they read the reading assignment? If they didn't read the reading assignment, I find out if they have a learning disability, because I've had, a large number of sponsees who turned out to be functionally illiterate. They actually couldn't read this material, and the big book is not easy to read. And fortunately, there are audio recordings online now, but I had a set of audio recordings. I used to make CDs for people. And because a lot of people are not willing to admit that. But the other thing I've discovered in terms of people who got abstinent long-term is seldom been the people who I sponsored. It's been the people who their first meeting, I stayed after the meeting, and it wasn't a time, it was an in-person meeting or a Zoom meeting. I stayed after the meeting and I talked to them for an hour or 2 hours about what program meant for me. And I never saw them until 2 years later, and I didn't even recognize them because they had lost so much weight. But I've had at least four people come up to me and tell me that it was that conversation that got them on the right path. And it hasn't necessarily been that I sponsored them in the sense of working the steps with them. So, you know, I've come to realize that okay. Thank you very much. Bye-bye. Oh,
thank you, Ann B. from New York. And Allison, we're going to take you next. I will be able to take a few more names to share on the second paragraph on page 96, so be ready to jump in after Allison share. So good morning, Allison.
Good morning. I'm Allison, a compulsive eater. Allison B. from New Mexico. Grateful to be here this morning. Thank you for your service. This is the first time I've shared on a meeting, Visions for You meeting, and I'm new to the program with 3 weeks of abstinence. Very, very grateful to be here and really have gotten so much out of your shares today. So thank you for that. And really, I think what I want to share today is just what really struck me in this paragraph, that let him know you are available if he wishes to make a decision, and tell his story, but do not insist upon it if he prefers to consult someone else. And what I heard in that was, this is not a program of ego, and it's not about you bringing a prospect in and being responsible for his or her recovery. It's what we do is make ourselves available. And if that person, what I hear in this is it's really between the addict and his or her higher power, and how they choose to move forward is really God's will, not mine as a recovering addict, and I appreciate that. I mean, I think we're not here to evangelize, which is if you were, I would be running for the hills. I'll have to tell you. But when I am able to listen to other people's experience, strength, and hope, and go, oh, that worked for them. Maybe that could work for me. You know, like the despair and the hopelessness that I have felt around food, and that when people say, wow, you know, there really is a solution, and this is the steps you need to take. It's not saying this is what I think you should do. It's more like these are the steps that you take. And so that what do you call it? Like that engagement with outcomes that a potential sponsor might have are not important. It's more about that addict getting help. And however that manifests, you know, whether it be through this person sponsoring, or this person just being telling their story so that the addict can then find the best or the path for him or her, you know, and that's really what it's about. And I think, and I've been in, I am in other 12-step programs, so I do know the 12 steps. And for me, that's the most, one of the most miraculous, you know, of course there's recovery, but it's also that being able to step back and just share what we have without ego. Thanks for letting me share.
And thank you, Allison B. in New Mexico. And I can take two more names who would like to share on the second paragraph, page 96.
Emma R.
Sherry Josie.
Diane B.
Okay, so I have Emma R. and was it Sherry Joe C?
Sherry Josie.
Okay, and I don't think we're going to have time for you, Diane, but if we do, I'll let you know. Okay, Emma, go ahead, please.
Hi, my name's Emma R. I'm a compulsive overeater, gratefully recovering. I just wanted to get current. My sponsor asked that I share today, and I agreed with her that it was probably it made the most sense to do that. Last night, I did lose my abstinence. I decided not to eat dinner, and I let my emotions get the better of me. However, I know it didn't all just happen from last night. I know on Sunday I was getting in my head about a meal that I had, and I didn't reach out to my sponsor about it, and I didn't voice it. I hadn't made an outreach call since then, since Sunday night, and it's just reminded me that, you know, it's a simple program, and, you know, you need to really be all in every single day, and that it's really easy to let this disease take over. And clearly the last couple of days, I just haven't been prioritizing my program and, you know, seeking higher power for help. And I've really let, my self-ego and self-consumption take over. So I'm grateful to be on this meeting. I'm really grateful for the opportunity to recover one more day. And thank you for letting me share. With that, I will pass.
Thank you, MR. And Sherry Josie, go ahead, please.
Good morning. Thanks so much. This is Sherry Josie, a recovered compulsive eater in Southern California. I'm grateful for the meeting today and for this reading. The words that stand out to me are where it says he's read this volume and says he's prepared to go through. And I'm thinking of where it says other places in our text that, you know, that the overeating is but a symptom of deeper problems. And one of my deeper problems was that there was a big difference between the things that I said and the things that I did. And so when I read that, it's great if someone says they're prepared to go through with it. And that makes me really happy, because I think, you know, the person is at a place where, you know, they're ready to leave something behind that's really been hurting them. But it's still just words. And I always remind myself to not get ahead of other people, you know, to meet people where they are. And if someone says they're prepared, that's great. And that's just a beginning, just like it says here in our literature. And that there's a long road of reconstruction ahead. And the part where it says, you know, you can give much practical advice. That's right. I can only share up to my own level of experience. What's worked for me with abstinence, with working the steps. Let him know you're available if he wishes to make a decision. You know, when I went to one of my first meetings in Royal Oak, Michigan, that was 30 years ago, 32 years ago. I've been abstinent and working this program for 31 years, and I've sponsored, and I've been sponsored that entire time. And that very first meeting, I heard people talk about recovery and abstinence. There was a woman there who said she hadn't eaten compulsively for 5 years, and I just was like, oh my God, like I couldn't even imagine. But that wasn't really what scared me. What scared me was another word that I heard at that meeting, and it was the word responsibility. And I left that meeting, and I got it, that my recovery was going to be my responsibility. And it made me realize that one of the, you know, problems underlying my compulsive eating was that I had never really wanted to take personal responsibility for my life, my decisions, my recovery. And that, you know, as much as hearing in that meeting that people had found a way out, which was miraculous to me, I would say equally important for me in that meeting was realizing that this was going to be up to me, with support, with a higher power that I was going to get to know and learn to rely on. But it wasn't going to come down to anybody else. And, you know, it wasn't any guru. It wasn't any person with, you know, decades of recovery. It wasn't anything that was going to save me. You know, that those are wonderful supports, but it was going to come down to me and my decision and getting my words to line up with what I actually did. And I always think about that joke about how do you know if an addict is lying? And, you know, the punchline is if their lips are moving. And I say that about myself because that's how I used to be. I honestly did mean it when I said it. But it really only had meaning when I followed it up with action. So, you know, I see my role as, you know, being there for support and helping, you know, to find someone, find, you know, those turning points in their life that really, you know, solidify our recovery and help us to go forward. So thanks for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you, Sherry Jo C. in California. Okay. And thank you everyone who shared this morning. Special thanks to Team Wednesday. And let's see, Stephen G., if you would please read A Vision for You.
Stephen G., our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.